And good afternoon and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 70. 70, nice round number. You know how I like those round numbers. Anyway, this is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois, where it is continuing to be winter. Don't have much to say about the weather this time around, because really, nothing has happened. The snowfall that I was talking about last time never really materialized into anything that stuck, so it is kind of cold out. But we don't really have much snow on the ground other than residual snow that was left over from a couple of weeks ago. But that's even getting to be less and less and less. Anyway, this has been a crazy week, and I know I said that last time, but I've come to realize over the last few days that I really don't have time to do all of the various projects that I've sort of committed myself to. And I've been trying to kind of think about what to do about that, because the way it has been working right now is that I've been working a lot of overtime at work, so I'm getting home late most days, and then after I've gone into the, you know, the rigmarole of getting home and having dinner, etc., I've really only got a couple of hours left in the evening that I can really do anything. And what has happened is, during the time that I was unemployed, I overextended myself as far as the various things that I was doing. And I'm working on a Plain Dudes radio episode, for example. I've got this show, of course, which is something that's not going to change. I'm going to continue to do this show. But the bottom line is that all the various things that I've become committed to, I really don't have time to pursue. And I've been just kind of overwhelmed with trying to get things done and just kind of throwing my hands up and saying, well, God, you know, there's no way that I'm going to get all of this done. At least not any time in a reasonable manner. And I've been kind of thinking over the last few days, well, what am I going to do about that? I don't want to give the show a break. I don't want to, like, you know, go for a few weeks without posting anything. And I don't want to give up on any of the things that I've already committed to do, like Plain Dudes Radio. So what I've decided to do, now, I think I talked about in a previous episode where I had a space crunch with my provider, with Podbean, who hosts this podcast. And during that space crunch, I was forced to delete off of the server 10 episodes of the original show. And I've been thinking, just kind of throwing around these ideas, well, what could I do? You know, because I do eventually want to get them back on the server. But I don't want to do reruns. I don't want to actually post an episode of the show that, you know, is an old episode and just kind of say, well, go, oh, here's your episode. Because I think that would be kind of lazy. And I think that it also wouldn't be as interesting, because I think a lot of people have heard those old episodes. And it wouldn't hurt them to listen to them again. But I don't want to do reruns. I think it's kind of tacky. So what I've decided to do, and this is an idea that I came up with yesterday on my way home, on my walk home from the office, it was a nice, brisk walk that I had, is that I'm going to put these episodes back. At least I'm going to put some of the content back. But it's not going to be a rerun exactly. It's going to be a revisitation to those episodes. And I've decided that what I'm going to do is I'm going to do, my first one is going to be next time. And what you're going to get next time is not going to be Tom Harris USA episode number 71. It's going to be Tom Harris USA episode 4. But it's going to have new content in it as well as old content in it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through episode number 4. And the reason I chose that is a thematic one, because next show would be being posted, I think, the day before Valentine's Day. And I think it would just be thematically more elegant if I were to do this show that was about relationships on the day before Valentine's Day. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to revisit episode number 4. I'm going to use that as my basis, and I'm going to annotate it. I'm going to actually go in and I'm going to make edits, and I'm going to go ahead and talk about the subject again in a way, because I'm going to actually be adding bits and pieces to that original episode 4. And I'm going to try to make the edits as seamless as possible. So it'll be as though you're listening to a continuous narrative, and it won't be me stopping and starting and making additional comments. I'm going to actually try to insert my commentary in a way that won't be noticeable. I don't know how well that'll work, but I'm going to give it a go. So this really kind of will kill two birds with one stone. This will allow me to do a show that won't take very long to do, because I, you know, depending on how much new material I add, it probably won't take even half as long as recording one of these. And also, it'll allow me to get that older content back on the RSS stream. So I do want to emphasize also that this is an experiment. This is just something I'm trying out. If it doesn't work, I probably won't do it again. And if it comes down to that, I might do reruns just to get these old episodes back online again. Now, of course, just because I'm going to be redoing episode number 4 and giving it sort of an annotation, if you will, it doesn't mean that the original episode 4 is not going to still be available to people who want to hear it. And as I said on a previous show, if there's any of those episodes, episodes number 1 through 10, that you want to hear, you can email me, tom@tomharrisusa.com, and request it, and I will actually email you the episode. I'll just go ahead and send you out the MP3 file, and you can hear it in its original form. But those original forms will probably not be available on the server, at least for a while. So that's kind of what I'm thinking now, and I think it's kind of an interesting idea. I don't know how well it's going to work. If it works well, then I may do that for the other 9 original episodes that I had to remove. So we'll see what happens there. And I'm hoping that that'll turn out to be okay. One other thing that happened this week, it was kind of cool, is that I hit another record day for downloads. Now, the downloads for the show in general stay pretty stable. And then what happens is maybe somebody new will discover the show and they'll download all of the episodes or download a lot of the episodes all at once. And I had another record day for downloads on February 4th. And I think it's going to be a while before I'm going to be able to surpass that number of downloads again, but apparently several people at once decided they were going to download. I always check when those mass downloads happen to make sure that it's not a bot, because I know that there are bots out there who are, who will go in and they'll download stuff, and I don't know why they would do that. I don't know what the motivation for that is. And I've had a couple bots on the site before, and this doesn't appear to be one. It does seem that a lot of them came from the same source, but it doesn't seem that they all came from the same source. So there are some real people out there apparently doing this. My guess right offhand is that this is a response to my appearances on Pine Dudes Radio, the last 2-part episode about global warming, which I had contributions to. I had a clip in part 1, and I also had a clip in part 2. So I have a feeling that maybe people have picked that up as part of the PDR episode and are checking out my show, which is great, because that's exactly why I actually do things like PDR and make comments on other people's podcasts and so forth. In a large way, I actually am looking for people, if you like this show, then maybe you'll like this show, and trying to market the show a little bit, but also the exchange of ideas, which is, to me, is the most important thing about doing a show, is getting your ideas across and communicating with other people. Anyway, so that's been kind of an exciting thing going on with the show. So this morning, while I was preparing to record the show and was trying to think of things that I might want to discuss on the show, because I really didn't have any kind of clear idea of what to talk about this time, I found this really interesting article on CNN.com. And it's an article about people who call themselves time warpians. And I've talked about something similar on the show before. So what this is that these time warpians are people who, as much as possible, will live, dress, behave as though they live in a different era. Now, some of them do it just for fun, sometimes, occasionally. Some people do it all the time, which is to say they try to live as a Victorian lady or an Edwardian gentleman all the time. And I thought that this might be interesting to talk about, because I know I've talked about on the show before a group called the Society for Creative Anachronism. It was a group that I was part of back in the late 80s. My sister and her husband are still very much a part of today, which is a society which reenacts the Middle Ages as they should have been. So it isn't necessarily a an accurate portrayal of the Middle Ages, but they do it for fun. It is sort of a game, I guess you could say. Nobody actually lives that way in real life, as far as I know, but it's a pastime and a pretty harmless one and a good way to socialize with people and so forth. And of course, you've probably also heard of reenactment societies, and this would be people who will reenact famous battles, for example. I know that there are Revolutionary War reenactors, there's Civil War reenactors, there may even be like World War II reenactors, I really don't know. But what's really interesting about this article is that it really kind of focuses on people who live their lives in an anachronistic way. So they talk about people in this article who try to live as the Victorians would live, or to live as people would live in the 1940s and 1950s. And they live that way all the time. It isn't something that they just put on weekends, or something that they do a couple times a year for a sci-fi convention or an SCA event or stuff like that. But I do kind of have mixed feelings about this, because on one hand, they're pretty harmless. It seems like they're having fun with it. They're enjoying it. Maybe they're learning about, you know, other eras, and maybe in a way it'll make them appreciate the era that we live in more, because of, you know, maybe, you know, clothing technology being more labor intensive. You know, it takes you longer to dress this way. Maybe if you're living your lives and you're having to prepare all your meals from scratch on a wood stove or whatever. It doesn't really say in the article whether these people actually do away with cars or do away with, you know, the conveniences of modern life. Obviously, most of them have computers, and I would assume that a good number of them have televisions and telephones as well. And I certainly doubt that any of them would want to do without things like modern plumbing. What gets me a little bit, and it kind of raises a little bit of a red flag to me, is in the article, a lot of these people are talking about doing this because they don't like the modern era. They're actually they think that if they do this, that it's somehow going to take them back in time to what they see as a more genteel era, or as they see as a better way of living. And they completely ignore, of course, the dark side of living in the past and the horrible things that happened back in the past. And again, I think they kind of over-romanticize the past era that they identify with. And when you think about it, you know, on one hand, it's fairly harmless. On the other hand, they live in today's era. They don't live in the 19th century. They don't live in the 17th century. They don't live in the 1950s. They live in beginning years of the third millennium. And in a way, I kind of wonder about some of the people, because in the article they're talking about, well, they don't like the modern era. They think that the modern era has become, you know, too self-centered. People have become too self-centered and not enough about the group around them. You know, that's certainly a valid observation, and it's a valid concern. But is dressing in 1950s gear really the answer? There was one quote that I really liked, and this came from one of these Victorian gentlemen. This is a gentleman who lives in London, and he dresses in Victorian clothes and lives in a Victorian way. I imagine it would probably be easier to do that over in the UK, because you have so many older buildings, and a lot of these buildings still have vintage features to them that have not been renovated and so forth. And I've actually stayed in a few of these old buildings that still have stables in the back, though nobody uses them anymore. But he made a comment that I thought was very insightful, and I really liked it. And he's saying that, you know, in the modern era, sometimes it seems that people aren't taking the time out to enjoy the little things in life, like going for a walk. And I think there's definitely a good point being made here, where you can say, yeah, I believe that too. I understand that too. There's a reason why I don't have a TV or a cell phone. It's because I don't want them. You know, I have enough things that I can waste my time with without resorting to that, but I do enjoy the little things in life, like going for walks. And, you know, you're not being distracted by entertainment, by the mass media. And in that regard, I do hear what they're saying. You know, and even sympathize to a certain point. But I don't need to dress in a frock coat and a monocle and a top hat to live in a way that where you do appreciate the smaller things. The stopping and looking at a flower or watching squirrels or, you know, people watching even at the park. I do that frequently. So I do really understand what they're saying to some extent, but I don't know how effective they're going to be towards changing people's minds about these things. But it also makes me think a little bit about how well these people are able to function in our modern society. I think that you could take this too far, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I'm sure that most people who do this are perfectly nice people, and they're doing it for their own reasons. And I have nothing to say about that. I'm not going to judge them. I think that there's a great deal of danger in idealizing the past and the way things used to be. It's one thing to be fascinated with the fashion and the arts and crafts and the games and so forth of the 19th century. It's another thing to embrace the morality and the ideals of the 19th century. Remember, the 19th century, slavery was the norm. And in the 1950s, women had very little rights. They had to live a very restrictive lifestyle, and those who didn't were often looked down upon by society at large. And you kind of wonder how much of this is part of this time-warpian movement. I'm guessing not a lot. I mean, that's my honest feeling, is that probably not a lot involved here. But I do, like I said, think that there's a great danger in idealizing the way things were in the past. In the 1950s, we still had segregation. You know, African Americans didn't have the right to vote. And I think that if you take this stuff too seriously, it could be harmful. We see a lot of this in the modern conservative movement. And I'm not picking on the conservatives. It's just that, you know, the conservatives have this idealized view of the past. And this is certainly true of the Reagan era conservatives. I don't know so much with the neoconservatives that came later, but certainly in the Reagan era, that their entire philosophy was based around rolling back the social change of the 1960s and going back to sort of this mythical utopia of the 1950s and the late 40s. The post-war era where America was at the height of its influence and the height of its power, and trying to rally their troops based on, oh yes, well, we can go back to this. Well, you can't go back to that. That has passed. That's 50 years ago. You can't really go back to that era. And as much as you want to go back to that era, it's never going to be 1948 again. And so I kind of wonder, you know, it is something to think about. So if anybody has any ideas in this, if you'd like to participate in the program, it is very easy to do so. Simply send an email, audio clip, whatever, to tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always like hearing from people. Anyway, I do find that really interesting because, as I said, you know, I was part of the SCA. And I had a lot of fun in the SCA. I was there for a few years. I joined about 86, and I think the last time I went to an event regularly was about 1991 or thereabouts. So I was not there for a real long time, but, you know, to me it wasn't something that I took seriously as far as actually trying to live my life in a medieval way. I would dress up in medieval clothes and hang out on weekends with my friends and we all were playing a character. We all had our persona, and it was pretty much just us calling ourselves by our persona names. There are a lot of people who were in the SCA that I didn't even know their real name. I knew them by their society name, and I didn't really care. You know, and a lot of those people are still there. I mean, I know that a lot of the people who I was friends with in the SCA are still part of it, even though I kind of left. And I left it to go do theater, which was actually, in a way, even an extension to me of what I was doing in the SCA. And it was much more straightforward acting. it is interesting to think about. And I've often thought, you know, would I want to go back and live in the Middle Ages? And I don't think I would. I really think that to me it would be more interesting to visit maybe if I had a time machine. That's an interesting topic, and I'll just kind of throw this out there and see if anybody bites on this. If you had a time machine, what era would you go back to? Say the world was ending, and you had a time machine, and it could only go one way. You could only go in the past. You couldn't, you know, because you couldn't go to the future because the world was ending. And you wanted to survive, and they offered you a chance to survive by going back in time. What era would you go back to? That's a really interesting question. And I think, because I just thought of it, I hadn't really thought that much about it, but I think I would go back to the 1960s. Because I just think that, you know, I already lived through the 1960s once, but I was a little kid. But I would like to go back and live in the 1960s as an adult and try to, you know, relive the era as an adult. And I know that there would be problems with doing that, but at least it would be more or less familiar because I kind of grew up in that era. And I find a lot of the things that were going on in the era, like the civil rights movement and the gay rights movement and all that things, I think that would be very interesting to be involved with actually as an active participant. And of course, this is a pipe dream. But I'd like to hear from you. What would you do if you could go back in time in a time machine? Would you go back to the Middle Ages? Would you go back to prehistory? Would you want to see dinosaurs? That would be cool. I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind going back to see dinosaurs. You'd probably get eaten by one. But it would be fun to do. It's fun to think about. So what would you do? As always, the email address for the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I am hoping that several people out there will participate in this discussion. I think it'd be kind of fun. Okay, so I have a comment here on Facebook. This is from our good friend Doug in Akeley. Doug, a longtime listener to the show. Doug had this to say about episode number 69. I was talking about critical thinking and talking about science and talking about authority and talking about whether people are qualified to talk about certain topics or not, and that you should really kind of go to people who know what they're talking about. Anyway, Doug had this to say. He said, one should also be skeptical of scientific results backed by big pharmaceutical and government. Both have much to gain by fabricating a need. Fair enough. That's a good comment, Doug. One of the things that about industry-based science, and we're talking about things like tobacco companies that do their own studies. You can call them scientific studies, I suppose, but they're not really, because they're not published in peer-reviewed journals. And there's only a limited number of publications that would be subject to peer review. So when, for example, a tobacco company does a study that, and inevitably that is going to find that tobacco is not harmful. That is the sort of, it's a non-science really in a way, because they're starting out with this notion of they want to make a buck. I mean, the tobacco companies are in it for the money. Pharmaceutical companies are in it for the money. So a lot of their research is going to go into, with tobacco at least, is going to go into the idea of proving that tobacco isn't harmful so that they can sell more tobacco. Now, the pharmaceutical companies, it's a little bit different because there is such a thing as science that is going on in the private sector. And some of this stuff is based on studies that are peer-reviewed. So, for example, you can have peer-reviewed studies of medication testing, you know, testing of drugs and medication on animals or on people, and these studies are peer-reviewed. Now, it's true in a lot of ways that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, they're doing this to make a buck. That's undoubtedly true, but that doesn't mean that the science is bad, necessarily. It does mean that they have a motivation which is based on profit. The important thing is whether or not the science is good science. It really has nothing to do with their motivation for doing the study. If the study is done in a way that has integrity, which means you're doing proper research, you're gathering data on the effects of a particular drug, and your results are peer-reviewed, and your results are actually tested and is subject to the falsification of your data. You have scientists from other scientists other than just the ones who work for the pharmaceutical company who are doing all of this work. You could still end up with a worthwhile scientific result. Now, the thing is, though, about industry-based science is that most of them don't publish in peer-reviewed scientific publications. They issue these reports, these informal papers, which are not meant for a scientific audience. They're meant for their marketing people, for, you know, that sort of thing. So you have to beware of that, because in order to have integrity in your research, you need to have a peer review process of some kind. And of course, this varies by the field of research that you're in. The problem is now about, you're talking about government research. Now, most research, most scientific research doesn't take place working for the government. Most of it has to do with universities and institutions of higher learning. And that is where the bulk of your science is going to take place. Who hires scientists? Well, it's going to be either the government, it's going to be universities, or it's going to be industry. And I don't think that it's fair to demonize research that is paid for by the government. I know that this is what the climate skeptics do. They demonize the scientists because they are accepting grant money from the government. But who else is going to pay for this research? If there's no clear profit motive in doing research into, say, seismology, studying earthquakes, who's going to pay for it? You know, the private industry is not going to make money off of seismological research. So you're really kind of restricted to government grants or educational grants. So I think that that is a non-issue in a lot of cases. It is possible to subvert, though, the process. And again, it's doing away with the peer review. Now, one of the criticisms of the climate skeptics, and this, I talked about this a little bit last time, is that they claim that the peer review process is not taking place in climatology. That's patently not true, because you have scientists all over the globe working on this. It's not just one small group at the University of East Anglia. So peer review is happening. They just don't like the results, so they're attacking the scientists themselves. They're not part of the peer review process, and their attempts at times to subvert the peer review process, for example, there was a situation in the climate science realm where the skeptics, they were not able to get their science published anywhere because they were not doing good science. They were basically doing what the creationists do and trying to tear down established science just by saying so. They weren't actually doing any research of their own. And they weren't being taken seriously by the scientific community because they weren't scientists doing real science. So what they did was they got some money together and they bought a previously existing scientific journal. That doesn't mean that they're doing good science. It just means that they bought a scientific journal to publish their drivel. And quite rightly, the people who actually were doing real science recognized, ooh, this could be a problem. The deniers are trying to create a reputation for doing science that they didn't deserve. So quite rightfully, real scientists began to think, well, maybe we shouldn't be recognizing this journal as legitimate science. And this issue was actually brought up by the climate skeptics in the discussion surrounding ClimateGate. They point out that there was a discussion about whether or not to recognize this journal as legitimate or not. Not because they're doing good science that the climatologists disagree with. It's because this is an agenda-driven journal now. It has nothing to do with real research. This would be like a tobacco company taking over a scientific journal to publish their findings about how safe tobacco is. Anyhow, it looks like I'm running out of time now, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Thanks for listening. As always, I love hearing from people. The email address for the show, once again, is tom@tomharrisusa. Remember, next time is not going to be an all-original show. It is going to be episode number 4 revisited. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on Tom Harris USA episode 4. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois, signing off.